This is Library on the Go, brought to you by the Cortez Public Library as part of our program to improve childhood literacy. I'm Ms. Laura.
And I'm Ms. Barbara.
And today Ms. Barbara is going to continue our serial on Wind in the Willows.
Before we get started, there's a couple of terms in today's story that I was not totally familiar with. One of them I kind of knew. The one is called bubble and squeak, which is a meal, and it's cooked cabbage with meat, usually beef. And I guess it's named that for the noise it makes as it's cooking. The other is a linen press, which back when this was written, houses did not have closets. And so linens were stored in kind of like an armoire or a chest, and they were called linen presses. So,
and I failed the linen press when she asked me if I knew what it was.
I knew pretty much what a linen press was, but I didn't know bubble and squeak. I had to look that one up.
Yeah, I guessed an iron or like a press that a dry cleaner would use.
That,
so
that
I was way off.
Your first indication.
Well, it had to do with clothes.
Yeah.
I didn't get that on Jeopardy either.
So we're going to continue with Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham. And if you remember last week, Badger, Ratty, and Mole went to Todd Hall to save Toad from his dangerous passion for automobiles. He was a terrible driver and was always wrecking his cars and getting hurt and being fined because he didn't obey the laws. His friends decided to stay with him and locked him in his room. He persuaded Ratty he was sick and asked him to go to the doctor as soon as Ratty left, Toad tied his sheets together and escaped out his bedroom window. Full of conceited thoughts, he strode along, his head in the air, till he reached a little town where the sign of the Red Lion swinging across Main Street reminded him that he had not breakfasted that day. He marched into the inn, ordered the best luncheon he could be provided, and sat down to eat it in the coffee room. He was about halfway through his meal when an only too familiar sound approaching down the street made him start trembling all over. The boop boop drew nearer, and the car could be heard to turn into the inn yard and stop. Presently, the party entered the coffee room, talkative and gay, voluble on their experiences of the morning. Toad listened all ears. At last he could stand it no longer. He slipped out of the room, paid his bill at the bar, and sauntered around to the inn yard.
"Well, there can't be any harm," he said to himself, "in my just looking at it."
The car stood in the middle of the yard, quite unattended. Toad walked slowly around it.
"I wonder," he said to himself presently, "I wonder if this sort of car starts easily."
Next moment, hardly knowing how it came about, he found he had hold of the handle and was turning it. As the familiar sound broke forth, the old passion seized Toad, and he found himself, somehow, seated in the driver's seat, as if in a dream. He pulled the lever and swung the car round the yard and out through the archway. He increased his pace, and as the car devoured the street and leapt forth on the high road through the open country, he was Toad once more. Toad at his best. Toad the terror, the traffic queller, the lord of the lone trail, before whom all must give way. The miles were eaten up as he sped, he did not know where, living his hour, reckless with what might come to him.
"To my mind," observed the chairman of the bench of magistrate, "the only difficulty in this case is how can we make it sufficiently hot for this rogue and hardened ruffian we see cowering in the dock before us? He has been found guilty of stealing a valuable motor car, of driving to the public danger, and of gross impertinence to the rural police. Mr. Clerk, tell us, please, what is the stiffest penalty we can impose for each of these offenses?"
The clerk scratched his nose with his pen.
12 months for the theft, 3 years for the furious driving, and 15 years for the cheek. Those figures total up to 19 years. So you had better make it around 20 and be on the safe side, he concluded.
Excellent, said the chairman. Prisoner, it's going to be 20 years for you this time. And mind, if you appear before us again upon any charge whatever, you shall have to deal with you very seriously.
The toad was dragged from the courthouse to the grim old castle whose ancient towers soared high overhead. There in the heart of the innermost keep, the rusty key creaked in the lock, the great door clanged behind him, and Toad was a helpless prisoner in the remotest, best guarded dungeon in all the length and breadth of Merry England. I think we'll let Miss Laura take a station break.
Thank you, Miss Barbara. This is Library on the Go from KSJD Cortez at 91.5, KZET Toyoc at 90.5, and KICO Rico at 89.5. We are heard in Mancos at 91.1 and in Pleasant View at 90.9. KSJD is member supported. Solar-powered community radio heard across the Four Corners area from Rico to Shiprock, Mancos to Kayenta, and beyond. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web at ksjd.org. And please do like us on Facebook. And 20, read to a child, the most important 20 minutes of your day. And here's more of Mr. Toad's Misery.
Actually, this is chapter 7 called Toad's Adventures.
Oh.
When Toad found himself in a dungeon and knew that all the grim darkness of a medieval fortress lay between him and the world of sunshine and high roads where he had lately been so happy, he flung himself at full length on the floor and shed bitter tears.
This is the end of everything, he said. At least it is the end of Toad, which is the same thing. Oh, unhappy and forsaken Toad!
He passed his days and nights for several weeks, refusing his meals or intermediate light refreshments, though the jailer, knowing Toad's pockets were well lined, frequently pointed out that many comforts, indeed luxuries, could be sent in, at a price, from the outside. Now the jailer had a daughter, and this kind-hearted girl said to her father one day, I can't bear to see that poor beast so unhappy and getting so thin. You let me have the managing of him. I'll make him eat. Her father replied that she could do what she liked with him. He was tired of Toad and his sulks. So she went and knocked on the door of Toad's cell. Cheer up, Toad, she said, entering. Sit up and try a bit of dinner. See, I've brought you some of mine, hot from the oven. It was Bubble and Squeak between two plates, and its fragrance filled the narrow cell. The penetrating smell of cabbage reached the nose of Toad as he lay prostrate in his misery on the floor, and gave him the idea for a moment that life was not such a desperate thing as he had imagined. But still, he wailed and kicked his legs and refused to be comforted. So the wise girl retired. But, of course, the smell of hot cabbage remained, as it will do, and Toad, between sobs, sniffed and reflected and gradually began to think new thoughts of chivalry and poetry and deeds still to be done, of meadows and cattle browsing in them, kitchen gardens and straight herb borders and warm snapdragons beset by bees. The air of the cell took on a rosy tinge. He began to think of his friends, and how they would surely be able to do something, of lawyers, and what an ass he had been for not to get a few, and lastly he thought of his own cleverness and resource, and all that he was capable of if he only gave his great mind to it, and the cure was almost complete. When the girl returned some hours later, she carried a tray with a cup of tea steaming on it and a plate piled with hot buttered toast. The smell of that toast simply talked to Toad, talked of warm kitchens, breakfasts on bright frosty mornings, cozy firesides on winter evenings when one's ramble was over and slippered feet were propped on the fender. Toad sat up, dried his eyes, sipped his tea, and munched his toast, and soon began talking freely about himself and the house he lived in, his doings there, and what a lot his friends thought of him. The jailer's daughter encouraged him to go on. "Tell me about Toad Hall," she said. "It sounds beautiful, but first wait till I fetch you some more tea and toast." She tripped away and returned with a fresh trayful. And Toad, pitching in, told her about the boathouse, the fish pond, and the old walled kitchen garden, about the pigsties and the stables, the pigeon house and the hen house, and about the dairy and the wash house, the china cupboards and the linen presses. She liked that bit especially. About the banqueting hall and the fun they had there when with the other animals gathered around the table, and Toad was at his best, singing songs, telling stories, carrying on generally. Then she wanted to know about his friends, and was very interested in all he had to tell her about them, and how they were, and what they did to pass their time. When she said good night, having filled his water jug and shaken up his straw for him, Toad curled himself up and had an excellent night's rest and the pleasantest of dreams. They had many interesting talks together as the dreary days went on, and the jailer's daughter grew very sorry for Toad and thought it a shame that a poor animal should be locked up in prison for what seemed to her a trivial offense. One morning she said, "Toad, listen, I have an aunt who is the washerwoman." "Never mind," said Toad affably. "I have several aunts who ought to be washerwomen." "Oh, do be quiet, Toad," said the girl. "As I said, I have an aunt. She does the washing for the prisoners in this castle. Now, she's very poor. A few pounds would mean a lot to her. If you could come to some arrangement by which she would let you have her dress and bonnet, you could escape from the castle as the official washerwoman. You're very alike in many respects, particularly about the figure." "We are not," said Toad. "I have a very elegant figure for what I am." "So has my aunt," replied the girl, "for what she is. But have it your own way, you horrid, proud, ungrateful animal, when I'm sorry for you and trying to help you."
"Yes, yes, thank you very much indeed," said Toad. "But look here, you wouldn't surely have Toad of Toad Hall going about the country disguised as a washerwoman."
"Then you can stop here as Toad," replied the girl. Now, Toad was always ready to admit him to himself when he was in the wrong.
"You are a good, kind, clever girl," he said, "and I am a stupid Toad. Introduce me to your worthy aunt, if you will be so kind."
Next evening, the girl ushered her aunt into Toad's cell, bearing his week's washing, pinned up in a towel. The sight of certain gold sovereigns thoughtfully placed on the table left little to discuss. In return for his cash, Toad received a cotton print gown, an apron, a shawl, and a rusty black bonnet, the only stipulation the old lady made being that she should be gagged and bound and dumped in a corner. "Now, Toad," said the girl, "take off that coat and waistcoat of yours. You're fat enough as it is." Shaking with laughter, she proceeded to hook and eye him into the gown, arranged the shawl with a professional fold, and tied the bonnet under his chin.
"You're the very image of her," she giggled, "only I'm sure you never looked so respectable in all your life. Now, goodbye, Toad, and good luck. Go straight down the way you came up, and if anyone says anything to you, as they probably will, being men, you can chafe back a bit, of course. But remember, you're a widow woman with a character to lose."
With a quaking heart, Toad set forth on what seemed to be a harebrained and hazardous undertaking. But he was soon surprised to find how easy everything was made for him. The washerwoman's squat figure in its familiar cotton print seemed a passport for every barred door and grimmed gateway. Even when he hesitated, uncertain as to the right turning to take, he found himself helped by the warder at the next gate, anxious to be off for his tea, summoning him to come along sharp and not keep him waiting all night. At last he heard the wicked gate wicket gate in the great outer door click behind him, felt the air of the outer world upon his brow, and knew that he was free. Dizzy with the easy success of his daring exploit, he walked quickly toward the town. As he walked along, his attention was caught by some red and green lights a little way off, and the sound of puffing and snorting of engines fell on his ear.
"Aha," he thought, "this is a piece of luck, a railway station."
He made his way to the station, consulted a timetable, and found that a train bound more or less in the direction of home was due to start in half an hour.
"More luck," said Toad, and went off to the booking office to buy his ticket.
He gave the name of the station nearest Toad Hall and put his fingers where his waistcoat pocket should have been and found not only no money, but no pocket to hold it, and no waistcoat to hold the pocket. To his horror, he recollected that he had left both coat and waistcoat behind him in his cell, and with them his money, keys, matches, watch, pencil case, all that made life worth living. He made one desperate effort to carry the thing off, and in his fine old manner said,
"Look here, I've left my purse behind. Just give me that ticket, will you, and I'll send the money on tomorrow. I'm well known in these parts."
The clerk stared at him and the rusty black bonnet.
"I should think you were well known," he said, "if you tried this game often. Stand away from the window, madam. You're obstructing the other passengers."
Baffled and full of despair, he wandered down the platform where the train was standing, and tears trickled down his nose.
"Hello, mother," said the engine driver. "What's the trouble? You don't look particularly cheerful."
"Oh, sir," said Toad, "I am a poor, unhappy washerwoman, and I've lost all my money, and I can't pay for a ticket, and I must get home tonight somehow. And whatever am I to do? I don't know. Oh, dear, oh, dear."
"Well, that's a bad business," said the engine driver. "Lost your money and can't get home, and got some kids, too, waiting for you, I dare say."
"Any amount," sobbed Toad, "and they'll be hungry, and playing with matches, and upsetting lamps, and quarreling. Oh, dear, oh, dear."
"I tell you what," said the good engine driver, "you're a washerwoman, and I'm an engine driver, and there's no denying it's terribly dirty work. If you'll wash a few shirts for me when you get home and send them along, I'll give you a ride on my engine. It's against the company's regulations, but we're not so particular in these out-of-the-way parts."
Toad scrambled up into the cab of the engine. Of course, he had never washed a shirt in his life, and couldn't if he tried. But he thought,
"When I get home to Toad Hall and have money again and pockets to put it in, I will send the engine driver enough to pay for quite a quantity of Washington, and that will be the same thing, or better."
The guard waved his welcome flag, and the engine driver whistled in cheerful response, and the train moved out of the station. As the speed increased and Toad could see fields and hedges and cows and horses all flying past him, and as he thought how every minute was bringing him nearer to Toad Hall and his friends, and money to chink in his pocket, and a soft bed to sleep in, and good things to eat, and admiration of his adventures and his cleverness, he began to skip up and down and sing snatches of a song, to the great astonishment of the engine driver, who had come across washerwomen before, but never one like this. They had covered many a mile, and Toad was considering what he would have for supper, when he noticed the engine driver, with a puzzled expression on his face, was leaning over the side of the engine and listening hard.
"It's strange," he said. "We're the last train running tonight, and yet I could have sworn I heard another following us."
A dull pain in the lower part of Toad's spine made him want to sit down and try not to think of all the possibilities. By this time, the moon was shining brightly, and presently the engine driver called out,
"I can see it now. It's an engine. It looks as if we're being pursued."
The miserable Toad, crouching in the coal dust, tried hard to think of something to do, with dismal want of success.
"They're gaining on us fast," cried the engine driver, "and the engine is crowded with the queerest sort of people, warders and policemen, all waving and shouting the same thing. Stop! Stop! Stop!"
Toad fell on his knees and cried,
"Oh, save me, Mr. Engine Driver. I am not the washerwoman I seem to be. I am a toad, and I have just escaped from a loathsome dungeon. And if those fellows on that engine recapture me, it will be chains and bread and water misery once more."
The engine driver looked down on him very sternly and said,
"Now tell the truth. What were you put in prison for?"
"It was nothing much," said Toad, coloring deeply. "I only borrowed a motor car. I didn't mean to steal it, really."
The engine driver looked very grave and said,
"By rights, I ought to give you up. But I don't hold with motor cars, and I don't hold with being ordered about on my own engine. So cheer up, Toad. I'll do my best, and we may beat them yet."
They piled on more coal, shoveling furiously. The furnace roared, the sparks flew, the engine leaped and swung, but still their pursuers gained. The engine driver wiped his brow and said,
"It's no good, Toad. They are running light and having the better engine. That's just one thing left to do. It's your only chance, so be ready to jump when I tell you."
The train shot into a tunnel, and the engine roared and rattled till they shot out at the other end. The driver shut off steam and braked, and as the train slowed down, he called,
"Now jump!"
Toad jumped, rolled down a short embankment, picked himself up unhurt, and scrambled into the woods and hid. Peeking out, he saw his train get up speed and disappear at a great pace. Then out of the tunnel burst the pursuing engine, roaring and whistling, her motley crew waving and shouting,
"Stop! Stop! Stop!"
When they were past, Toad had a hearty laugh, for the first time since he was thrown into prison. But he soon stopped when he came to consider that it was now very late and dark and cold, and he was in an unknown wood, with no money and no supper, and still far from friends and home. And the dead silence of everything, after the roar and rattle of the train, was something of a shock. An owl, swooping towards him, brushed his shoulder with its wing, making him jump. Once he met a fox, who stopped and looked him up and down in a sarcastic sort of way and said,
"Hello, washerwoman. Half a pair of socks and a pillowcase short this week. Mind it doesn't occur again,"
and swaggered off, sniggering. At last he sought the shelter of a hollow tree, where he made himself as comfortable a bed as he could, and slept soundly till morning. This is Chapter 8, The Further Adventures of Toad. The door of the hollow tree faced eastward, so Toad was called at an early hour. And sitting up, he rubbed his eyes, looking round for familiar stone wall and barred window, and then, with a leap of heart, remembered everything. His escape, his flight, his pursuit, but best of all, that he was free. Free! He marched forth into the morning sun. He had the world to himself that early summer morning. The dewy woodland was solitary and still. The green fields were his own to do with as he liked, and the road, when he reached it, in that loneliness that was everywhere, seemed to be looking for company. Toad, however, was looking for something that could tell him clearly which way to go. The road was presently joined by a little canal, and round a bend in the canal came plodding a solitary horse, stooping forward as if in anxious thought, and from his collar stretched a long line, taut but dipping with his stride, the further part of it dripping pearly drops. Toad let the horse pass and stood waiting for what the fates were sending him. Miss Laura, how's our time on this?
You have approximately 2 minutes.
Okay. With a swirl of water, the barge slid up alongside of him, its occupant, a big, stout woman, wearing a linen sunbonnet.
"A nice morning, ma'am," she remarked to Toad. "I dare say it is, ma'am," responded Toad, "to them that's not in trouble like what I am. My married daughter, she sends for me to come at once, so off I comes, fearing the worst, as you will understand, ma'am, if you're a mother too, and I've left my washing business to look after itself and my young children, ma'am, and I've lost all my money and my way."
"Oh, where might your married daughter be living, ma'am?" asked the bargewoman.
"Near Toad Hall, ma'am," replied Toad.
"Toad Hall? Well, I'm going that way," replied the bargewoman. "Come along in the barge with me, and I'll give you a lift."
She steered the barge close to the bank, and Toad stepped lightly on board.
"So you're in the washing business," said the bargewoman. "And are you very fond of washing?"
"Oh, I love it," said Toad. "I simply dote on it. Never so happy as when I've got both arms in the wash tub."
"What a bit of luck," observed the bargewoman.
"Why, what do you mean?" asked Toad nervously.
"Well, there's a heap of things of mine that you'll find in the corner of the cabin. If you'll just put them through the wash tub as we go along, it'll be a real help to me."
"I might not do 'em as you like," said Toad. "I am more used to gentlemen's things myself. It's my special line."
"You do the washing you are so fond of," replied the bargewoman. "Don't deprive me of the pleasure of giving you a treat."
Toad was fairly cornered. He looked for escape, saw he was too far from the bank for a flying leap, and resigned himself to his fate.
"If it comes to that," he thought in desperation, "I suppose any fool can wash."
He fetched the tub and the soap and the other necessities from the cabin, selected a few garments, and set to. A half hour passed, and every minute of it saw Toad getting crosser and crosser. Nothing he could do to the thing seemed to do them good. He tried coaxing, slapping, punching. His back ached, and he noticed with dismay that his paws were getting all crinkly. Now Toad was very proud of his paws. He muttered under his breath words that should never pass the lips of a washerwoman or Toad's, and lost the soap for the 50th time. And we're going to leave Toad there in the soap suds till next week.
And the barge woman knew that he really enjoyed it.
Yeah. You know, this book has some of the greatest illustrations in it. I hope if you're enjoying the story at all, you'll come by the library and look at it. It's delightful.
Do. Yes. And please remember 20. Read to a child the most important 20 minutes of your day. And I repeated that because it is so important. Thank you for joining us, and listen to us next week.